Okay, thank you very much. I want to thank Aunt Shirley for this very, very wonderful honor and the invitation to speak commemoration of Uncle Moshe's third yahrzeit. We dedicate our words, L'zecher Nishma, to Rav Moshe ben Meir Shmuel Lepero Lam, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Gemara tells us in Bechorot and Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Bet, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Mai Dichtiv Agura Be'ohalecha Olamim. When it says in the Sefer Tehillim in the Book of Psalms, I will live in your tent, Olamim, for eternity or forever. In a play on words, the Gemara asks, V'efshar la'adam la'gur b'shnei olamim. Is it possible for a person not to live eternally, but to live in two different worlds, meaning Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba? Ela Amar David Ribono Shel Olam Yomru Davar Shmua Mipi Ba Olam Hazeh. The Amar Reb Yochanan Mishum Reb Shimon Bar Yochai Kol Tamid Chacham Sha'omrim Dvar Shmua Mipiv Ba'olam Hazeh Siftotav Dovavot Bekever. But if you quote the Torah of a person who has passed away, but you quote the Torah that he recited during his lifetime, then it's as if it was his lips are moving in the grave. You're restoring life. You're giving life. You're giving eternity to the Torah and to the values and to the life and the impact of that person in even after the person has passed away and is in the Olam Haba. And I think that in many ways that describes the great legacy of Uncle Moshe. As a rabbi, as a chaplain, as a writer, as a person involved with establishing Jewish hospice, as a teacher, as a mentor, the words that he spoke, and especially the words that he wrote, continue to give him life. There's probably not a family that experiences death that doesn't find nechama, that doesn't find comfort through the words that he wrote so many years ago. There's probably not a person who is groping for hope that doesn't find that sense of hope and direction and comfort from the words that he wrote so many years ago. He taught us what it means to live life in the Jewish way, and that continues. And whether it's his legacy as a rabbi and teacher and writer, or as a husband and a father and a grandfather, a great-grandfather, an uncle, a brother, and a son, he really was something very, very unique and special. And those of us who knew him so well and loved him know that it wasn't just his words and his mind, but it was his heart, his warmth, his love, and his great laugh. He had a wonderful, wonderful sense of humor that I think continues to help us smile even as we remember him. So his work in Death and Mourning inspired our topic for this evening, and I'd like to share with you what I think may be a novel insight into Nicham Avelim, into providing comfort for mourners, and I hope you'll think that it's novel, and if not, at least you'll find it insightful by the time we are finished. So let's start from an overview, and then we will get down to the specifics, and that is the nature of the mitzvah of chesed, of showing kindness. And so you'll have in the sheets in front of you, and on line number one, a famous quote from the Rambam in Hilchot Evel, Mitzvat aseh shel divrehem levaker cholim lenachem avelim lahotzi hamet ulahachnis hakalal lavot ha'orchim leitasek b'chot tzorchei ha'kvura v'aseit al ha'katef elech lefanav v'lispov v'lachbor v'lidbor. There's so many various specific actions that are obligated to us, as the Rambam says, midivrehem midarabanan, whether it's comfort, whether visiting the sick or comforting the mourners, or providing the various burial needs of the person who has passed away, or it's to bring a kala to the chuppah, l'sameach kalava chatan, to make the kala and the chatan happy. I just noticed this. The kala comes before the chatan here, so it's. Okay, that's not the chiddush of the shir, but maybe it's the most important one that we're going to do these things. All of these, the Rambam writes in line four, gemilut chasadim shebegufo, involve one's personal actions, one's personal activities. It's not with money, but it's with our actions. She'ein lehem shiur, there's no limit. There's no minimum, and there's no maximum. V'yafa pi shekol mitzvot elu midivrehem, even though the specifics of these actions are rabbinic, They are included in the general Torah obligation of loving your neighbor, loving your friend as yourself. All those things you want others to do for you, you should do for others. That is the formulation of the Rambam of this very important mitzvah. Included in that is our topic for this evening, that of Nicham Avelim, that of comforting mourners. Before we get to the specific topic, though, I want to ask you a question about brachot in general. But we know that before we perform a mitzvah, we make a bracha, share kiddushana b'mitzvotav. Is that true in all cases? Do we make a bracha before every mitzvah? So for which mitzvot do we make a bracha? For which mitzvot do we not make a bracha? So we make a bracha for shofar. We make a bracha for tefillin. We make a bracha for Shabbos candles, etc. Do we make a bracha for tzedakah? Bikur cholim, nicham avelim? None of those things. So it's interesting to note that a bracha is recited only on those mitzvot which are bein adam l'makom, which are ritual in nature, our obligation, our expression towards God, but never on a mitzvah bein adam l'chaveiro, not on a mitzvah we perform for another person. So why not? Why not? A mitzvah is a mitzvah. So why do we not recite? Why do we not recite a bracha? So in order to answer the question, take a look at the last page. I once felt very guilty. I prepared sheets, and all the sources were out of order, and the entire shiur, people are flipping back and forth. And I mentioned to my father-in-law that I should have been prepared better to do. He says, "No, it's okay. It'll keep them awake." So that's the only reason that things are out of order here. So one of the answers we find in both the Torah Tzemimah and the Aruch HaShulchan, father and son team, who make a very radical suggestion. If you take a look at the formulation of the Aruch HaShulchan, which is the last source on page 5, and he says as follows on line 207. V'yesh shashalu, people asked, Lama in v'varchina mitzvah zo de kibud ave'im? Why don't we make a bracha on honoring parents? V'chein al kama mitzvot yesh she'ela zo. And other mitzvot, we ask the same question. Kamo tzedaka, gemilut chasadim, u'kayotze be'elu. U'laniut da'ati nir'eh, dekeven dechol umav lashon osimotam. Since all nations, all languages, all human beings perform these acts, Jew and non-Jew alike, perform acts of charity and kindness, etc. Nehisha osim mipnei ha-seichel, mikol makom shkeven shebe'asiya shavim heim, even though they're not obligated. They don't have the chiyuv. And we have a chiyuv, min ha-Torah. But nevertheless, since the action is the same, the only difference is one of intent, the motivation for performing the act of chesed. Some do it because God commanded, others do it because it's reasonable, it's rational. There was no bracha. The Chachamim didn't establish a bracha on this. Asher kiddushana b'mitzvotav v'tzivana. You can't say Asher Kiddushanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu. Why not? Because what does it mean, Asher Kiddushanu? Asher Kiddushanu, not just he sanctified us, but sanctification means separation, difference, uniqueness. And in that sense, there is nothing unique about Kibud Ava'im. There's nothing unique about Nicham Avelim. There's nothing unique about Tzedakah, because everybody does that. And so it doesn't make us special. And as a result, it doesn't get a bracha. That's answer number one for this, answering this question, why we don't have brachot for mitzvot bein adam l'chaveiro, because there's nothing special about it. It's interesting. I think people sense this intuitively. For example, in my experiences in the rabbinate over many years in education and dealing with individuals who become bali tshuva, so they want to become more observant. Generally speaking, when a person's becoming more observant, what kind of mitzvahs will they be performing? They start to keep kosher. They start to keep all of those things which are ritual. Why? Because in general, that makes us feel closer to God. There's something unique and special. When people take chumras in general, and it's nice to paint with broad brushes and stereotype all kinds of people and make all kinds of assumptions, right? But we generally find chumras also in those areas that are bein adam l'makom, usually more than bein adam l'chaveiro. because it makes us feel that extra sense of Kedusha as opposed to other things which don't make us feel special and unique and different. We may have been performing these acts, and we were certainly engaged in these acts before we became frum. Remember in the early in my rabbinate, there was a young man that Sarah and I had become close with, and he came to our house often, and he called me one night. He was in the process of becoming a Baal Tshuva. He called me one night with two shilas. We were living in South Florida at the time. The first question was, is it permissible to go to Hailai? It's a game with like a racquetball, because there's betting, there's gambling. And then there was a question he had with his friends about Lashon Hara. When I hung up the phone, I said to Sarah that this kid gets it. I was really very pleased and very proud of him because he understood that the becoming dedicated to Torah and mitzvot is not just Bein Adam L'Makom, but it is equally, or sometimes even more so, the Bein Adam L'Chavero as well. So there's nothing unique and special. That's one answer. Another answer one could suggest is the following. Remember once being in the hospital and listening, somebody came to was visiting somebody in the hospital, and he said to the patient lying in the bed, do you know anybody else who's in the hospital so I can chap a mitzvah? As long as I'm here visiting you, I'll get a mitzvah. Bikur cholim, I can visit somebody else. Which means essentially, what was the nature of the bikur cholim? Right, the sick person in the bed was merely a chesed shel mitzvah. Right, it wasn't the person and the person's needs and the person's feelings. It was the visitor's desire to get another mitzvah. Right, so you can imagine going to somebody in the bed or somebody sitting shiva or something, and before you offer the proper words, the shame yichud or yini muchan and mezuman the baruch with a great with shame and malchus with great kavana. How does the person on the receiving end feel? Right? Not too good. So that second answer for why there's no bracha on a mitzvah bein adam l'chaveiro is that there's a sensitivity to the recipient of the chesed, of the tzedakah, of the act, which has to be taken into account, which overrides the need for a bracha and actually cancels any need for a bracha. Because there has to be that personal element, and we're doing it because we want to be there for the person and engage that person, and not do it just because there's a mitzvah. So that's answer number two, why perhaps there's no bracha for a mitzvah, bein adam l'chavero. Answer number three, if you look back on page four now, the bottom of the page, a very fascinating tshuva from the Srid Ayesh. So after quoting from the Aruch HaShulchan and the answer that we had given before, he quotes another source which suggests that usually there's a difference between a mitzvah bein adam l'chaveru to bein adam l'makom. And that is, when it comes to mitzvah bein adam l'makom, it's totally up to me. I put on tefillin, I don't put on tefillin. I make kiddush, I don't make, whatever it may be. When it comes to an interpersonal obligation, I want to give tzedakah. So I reach out to give the money, will I necessarily perform the mitzvah? The poor person may say, no, I'm not interested. I haven't come across that yet, but it's possible for somebody not to receive it. It's dependent, it's toloi al dat acherim, it depends upon the will of the other person as well. So I could make a bracha, intend to do the mitzvah, but then not do the mitzvah at all because maybe the person will not receive it. And so that's a third reason why there is no Birkat HaMitzvah, right? Either because it's nothing unique, everybody performs these acts of kindness, or because we don't want to turn the recipient of our chesed into an object and only a vehicle for us to do a mitzvah, or because it's not just dependent upon me, it's dependent upon someone else. And the fourth answer is actually wild. From the Srid Ayesh of Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, in discussing the mitzvah of Mishloach Manot, of giving gifts of food on Purim to other people, he mentions on line 180 that Mishloach Manot is laharbot shalom v'ahav avareyut. The person of sending gifts of food to other people in Purim is to increase peace and love and friendship. And he goes on to explain that. And then take a look at line 189. Va'od nira lila chadesh. Shemishloach Manot hi be'emet mitzvah t'midit b'chol hashanah. That the mitzvah of Mishloach Manot is not just on Purim. But it's a mitzvah to meet it. It applies every single day of the year, 354 days a year, 24 hours a day. Mitzvah of Mishloach Manot. It's wild. Why? So if that's the case, why are we only, you know, why do we hear about only on Purim? For Rak Bepurim, Nistavinu Lekayem Befoal Mitzvah Zo, but on Purim there's a special mitzvah to do this, Kadesh Nizkor Bechol Hashana. We do it once a year to remind ourselves that there really is a mitzvah every day of the year. Kederach Sha'anu Korim Parshat Zachor. It's a mitzvah to meet it, remembering Amalek every day of the year. We have a special Shabbos, a special reading on Parshat Zachor to remind us, but really the mitzvah is every single day. So too, Kadesh Nizkor Shekol HaShana, so too the mitzvah of Mishloach Manot is really every day of the year. Because we have obligations as Jews, as human beings, to increase ahava, right? To increase shalom, and to increase reyut, friendship and love and peace. It's only on that day we remind ourselves of that. And there's no bracha shemitzvah to midit ve'ein la hefsek ein mevarchin alav. Since there's no beginning and no end and no middle of this bracha, there's a middle, but there's no beginning and no end. A mitzvah with no boundaries doesn't require a bracha. So it's a fascinating thing. It helps to give us insight into the nature of the mitzvah of chesed in general, our motivations for chesed, the purpose by which we do it. That it's part of our avodat Hashem, and yet it has to be sensitive to the needs of the needs of the others, and it's something which obligates us all of the time. What is the purpose? What is the motivation? What's the mechayiv? What is the obligation of chesed? So there are two possible verses. One was quoted by the Rambam. Now you can turn back to page one. This is to wake you up. What's the purpose of the mitzvah of chesed? What's the mechayiv? What's the verse which obligates us to perform kindness? So according to the Rambam, v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, love your neighbor as yourself. We do for others what you would want them to do for you. What's the other possibility? What's the other possible source for the obligation of kindness? The verse, v'halachta b'drachav, to walk in the ways of God, to imitate God. As the Gemara says, mahu rachum, afatacha rachum, just as God is merciful, you be merciful. As God is compassionate, you be compassionate. Or as the other source says, mahu mevakar cholim, afatam mevakar cholim, just as God visits the sick, you visit the sick. As God comforts the dead, you comfort the dead. Etc. So there's a possibility, either love your neighbor as yourself, or to imitate God, and for the individual to become more godlike in his interactions. All of this, by way of introduction, we will get back to. Okay, so keep this filed somewhere in your memory bank. Okay, to get into our more specific question about Nicham Avelim, about comforting the mourners. So first, there's a very strange Yerushalmi that we have here on lines 15 and 16. Moshe hitkin shivat yimei ha-mishta v'shivat yimei ha-evel. Moses established, he made an enactment that included the 7 days of mishta. That means the sheva brachos, the celebration for a bride and a groom, and shivat yimei ha-evel, the 7 days of mourning. So it's interesting that here we have Sheva Brachos, and we have mourning, and they're both Shiva. It's very strange. What's the interesting connection? What's the connection that's here, and what does this come to teach us? We will come back to this as well, I promise. Okay. It's a very strange, what's interesting, and the question really here is just, was this just an easy formulation? Or is there something essential in the comparison between these two groups of seven days? So we're going to find, interestingly, in the next source, in the Gemara Moed Katan Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph, that a halacha with which we are all familiar when it comes to Shever Brachos for a chasen and a kala also finds expression when it comes to Avelis, when it comes to mourning. And what is that? So take a look at line 22. Tana Rabbanan, Avel Shloshi Yamim HaRishonim Asur LaHaniach Tfilin. For the first 3 days of mourning, it is prohibited for a mourner to wear tefillin. Why would a mourner be forbidden to wear tefillin? Because tefillin is a pe'er, it's a decoration, it's an adornment. And in the state of intense mourning, which is the first 3 days of Shiva, and you want to know the difference between the first 3 days and the last 4 days, you can consult a very important book called The Jewish Way in Death and Mourning. The more intense mourning, so to adorn oneself in tefillin is prohibited. Starting the third day, it's permissible to wear tefillin. Ah, look at the next line. V'imba'u panim chadashot eino choletz. And if panim chadashos come, what are panim chadashos? We know panim chadashos from a wedding, right? You need new people. You need new faces in order to, we'll see, to recite the Sheva Brachos at the meal. And we'll have to look at that and figure out why. So the Sheva Brachos for the Shiva of Sheva Brachos, we knew. Here the Gemara says there's a matter of panim chadashos when it comes to mourning as well. If panim chadashos come, says Rabbi Eliezer, you don't remove the tefillin. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, you don't remove the tefillin. Give Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, Avel Shnei Yamim Harishonim, Asur Lahaniach Tefillin. Rabbi Yoshua says the first 2 days you shouldn't wear tefillin, but from the second day, and the second day included, you can wear tefillin. V'imbau panim chadashot, and if the new people come, choletz, you take those tefillin off. Something very strange. There's something about panim chadashot in Shiva which changes the practice. So whereas according to the first opinion, according to Rabbi Eliezer, you don't take the tefillin off, according to the second opinion, according to Rabbi Yoshua, you take your tefillin off. What's going on here? What do panim chadashot have to do with mourning? Okay, so that's going to be the thrust of the next little while in the presentation, to try to figure out what is going on here. Okay, so we started out talking about the brachot. Yes, bracha, no bracha when it comes to a mitzvah ben adam l'chavero and the various reasons for that. We saw the takana of Moshe Rabbeinu of Shiva and of Shiva, right? Shiva and of Sheva brachot, and there's some kind of parallel. We now see in the Gemara and Moed Katan that there is a similar halacha in both of panim chadashot, of new faces, of new people coming who hadn't participated before, that somehow impacts the celebration or the mourning, and we have to figure out what that means as well. So take a look now in the Shulchan Aruch on the bottom of page 1, line 36. Bracha zo shemosifim bevei chatanim hi bracha achrona mishever brachot shehi birkat asher bara. That in general, the default is that when you have a meal in honor of the bride and groom in the Beit Chatanim, following benching, you recite one bracha. That's the seventh of the brachot, Asher Bara Sason V'Simcha. That's the default. V'yesh omrim da'af Asher Bara im mevarchim kol zayin, elish kishemizamnin acherim, valim ochel im b'nei beito ein mevarchim, v'chein noagim. And you don't recite Asher Bara after every time you bench. It's only if you have guests that come and there's more of a party atmosphere. That's when you recite only the seventh bracha. B'med devarim amurim. When do we say that only the seventh bracha? K'shehayu ha'ochlim heim she'amdu b'birkat ha'nesuin v'shamu ha'brachot. Only if the people who have come to eat with us were present when the original brachos were made, and they already heard the blessings. V'alim hayu ha'ochlim achirim, but if there are people, other people who have come, v'lo shamu birkat nesuin b'shat nesuin, and they weren't at the chuppah, so they didn't hear the blessings at the time of the wedding, mevarchin b'shvilam achar birkat hamazon shever brachot k'derach shemevarchin b'shat nesuin. Now translate that for me. Mevarchin b'shvilam. How do you translate that? You bless for them. Who's them? The newcomers. Wait a second. Should have asked you this before I got to there. When we say the Sheva Brachot at the end of a meal during Sheva Brachos, for whom are those blessings recited? So I would have said, for the chasan and kala, that it's a part of being mesameach. I'm sorry, this is Rama, the kala and the chasan, right? And it's part of the celebration, and we're bringing new faces so we can make those brachos, so we can make the bride and groom happier. In fact, the way the Shulchan Aruch records it, the brachos recited are not for the sake of the bride and groom. They're for the sake of the panim chadashot, for the new people that are there. Kedarash mevarim, v'hushu you, as long as you have a minion, etc., etc. And then who are these panim chadashot? So there's some who say that they weren't at the chuppah. Another opinion says they may have been at the chuppah, but they haven't yet eaten and enjoyed part of the celebration. Another opinion says, who qualifies as panim chadashot? So usually, bizman hazeh, you always forget. You know, we got to get somebody. So you call a stranger off the street, or you call a neighbor who doesn't know the chasan and kala. If you're at a restaurant, the people who are sitting next to you, you schlep over to participate, and that's panim chadashot. According to opinion in the Shulchan Aruch, that's not the case. Who is a panim chadashot? Somebody who increases the simcha for the chasan and the kala. Somebody for whom you'll go out of your way and you'll put your extra nice dishes, or you'll have you'll have better food because you want to honor them, and by honoring them, you're giving greater honor and increasing the joy of the bride and the groom. But it's not just a stranger. So the panim chadashot, like, it's some interesting roles here. One is we recite the brachot for the panim chadashot because they haven't yet heard. On the other hand, the presence of the panim chadashot have a qualitative impact on the simcha of the chasan and the kala. So that's the story there. So for whom do we? So it's an interesting observation that the shever brachos at the meal in Birkat HaMazon may actually not be for the bride and groom. It may be for the other people. Why would I care that they hear brachos? Why would that be? And if that's the case, why do we go out of our way? To make sure that that's there. So that's question number, three or four, whatever we're up to. Okay? One other set of sources, and then we're going to come back and try to resolve all of these questions. So take a look now at line number 68. This is the Pirkei de Rebbe Eliezer. This is on page 2. So he has a fascinating description of the architecture and what took place in the Beit HaMikdash in the temple in Jerusalem. And we're going to see a number of different sources that are variations of this theme, but that are different. It's line 69. Ra'a Shlomo shemidat gemilut chasadim gedola lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. King Solomon saw that acts of kindness is great, is considered very highly before God. Just parenthetically, it was a wonderful vort. I was collecting some of Rabbi Lamb's writings on Pirkei and statements on Pirkei Avot, and one of the things he was talking about that the term gemilut chasadim, right? What does it mean? What does gemilut chasadim mean? Right. So to bestow kindness, but in a very beautiful homiletic way, he pointed out that the word gomel, which can mean to give, right, or to bestow, also means something else in Tanakh. What is Gimel Mem Lamed, besides being a camel? What's Gimel Mem Lamed? Right? When it comes to, it means to wean, right? Vayigamel. When Sarah stopped nursing Yitzchak, so that's sure, that word there is used, Gimel Mem Lamed. That Gomel is a sense of age, of maturity, of coming to a new stage, a new, more mature stage of life. And Rabbi Lamb suggested that Gemilut Chasadim means that when we perform chesed, it's not enough just to do chesed. It has to be done in a mature and a responsible way. It's not just, it's not a throwaway. And when you bring that kind of intent to the act of chesed, it becomes elevating, and it elevates those who do it, and it elevates those who are the recipients. Anyway, Shlomo saw that God likes gemilut chasadim. Ukeshebana beit hamikdash, bana shnei sha'arim. When Shlomo built the temple in Jerusalem, he built two gates on the Temple Mount. Echad l'chatanim, v'echad l'avelim u'lemenudim. two gates. One gate was for bridegrooms to walk through, and the other is for mourners to walk through. Here again, interestingly, we see the connection between these two types of individuals. What was the purpose of this? V'hayu Yisrael holchin b'shabbatot, v'yoshvin bein shnei sha'arim halalu. So the people would go to the Beit HaMikdash on Shabbat, and they would sit themselves down. They probably had nice benches with little nice dedication plaques on there, the whole bit. Between the two gates. V'hanechnas b'shar chatanim, and when they would see people walking through the gate for the grooms, hayu yodim shehu chatan, they would know this person just got married. V'hayu omrim lo, they would say to him, hashochem b'bayit hazeh yisamachacha b'banim u'vanot. May God make you happy. V'hanechnas b'shar avelim, he would go into the other gate for the mourners, and his mouth was covered, so they knew that he was actually mourning and not in excommunication. V'hayu omrim lo, they would say to him, Hashochem b'bayit hazeh yenachamecha, the one who dwells on this house, may he give you comfort. What's the purpose of this? Before we look at the end of this Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, what was the purpose of the people sitting at the gates offering these words to Nicham Avelim, so that the mourner walks away comforted, right? Or the chassan walks away acknowledged and happy. You would think, right? Take a look at the line 74, the third word. What was the purpose of these gates and the people sitting there and these greetings being offered? Kedei sheyetzu kol Yisrael yedei chovotan b'gemilut chasadim. In order for the people to fulfill their obligations of chesed. So who is the subject of this of these gates? Who for whose benefit are these gates? For the people, right? Not for the chassan so the exact opposite of what we had suggested in the beginning, that the chassan or the avil become chesed shel mitzvah. They become an opportunity for us to perform an act of chesed. And once the temple was destroyed, it goes into what was happening in the synagogues. In order for, so when you return in shul, for example, and we say, Amokim Yenachem, before after Lachadodi, to the mourner, it's not to comfort him, but it's to give us a mitzvah point that we performed an act of chesed. The end of line 76, V'aleim hu omer, and that is the meaning of the bracha, Baruch Ata Hashem, Notein Sachar Tov, L'gomlei Chasadim. Blessed be God who gives great reward to those who perform acts of chesed. It's a very strange formulation. So it would seem, according to this, that the purpose of chesed is for the person who performs the chesed. And the person who is in need is only the opportunity. That's Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer. Take a look at the Mishnah in Masechet Midot, at the bottom of the page, line 94. Parak Bet, Mishnah Bet, Kol ha-nechnasin la-harabayit, nechnasin derech yamin, u-makifin v'yotzin derech small. In general, when a person entered the Temple Mount, he would go into the gate, and he would turn to his right, and walk around in a counterclockwise direction, and then he would leave from the other side, leave from the left. Go, so you turn to your right, and you leave from the left. Chutz mimi she'iru davar shehu mekif l'small. Except for somebody who, something happened to them. Who? A person who is an avelus. A person who is sick. A person who has certain needs. This person, when he walked into the Temple Mount, would go to the left and walk around in a clockwise position. What was the reason for that? So at the end of line 94, so malachah, so what would happen? So chutz mi mishiro lo davar shu mekif l'small. Malachah mekif l'small. So people would see him and say, why are you walking the wrong way? He would draw attention to himself, and the person would answer, Sherni Avil, I just lost a relative, I'm in mourning. And the people would respond, Hashochem b'bayit hazeh yenachamecha, an opportunity for people to offer that person words of comfort. Or so too, if a person was sick, and to offer encouragement, in the Sechet Smachot, it talks about that a person who lost a lost object would do that, and people would encourage him, and the word would get out that something was lost, and hopefully they would find it. Take a look on page 3 at line 110. in his commentary on this Mishnah, the Tiferet Yisrael, gives a very beautiful explanation. Why is this person, why is the Avel, or the person who has a sick person at home, going to the left and not to the right? V'osa ken kedei lahodiyat sa'aro l'rabim v'yitpalalu alav. So based on the Gemara on Shabbos, he says, so people will see this and they will pray for him. They'll ask him and they'll offer words of comfort. Page 3, line 111. V'nirali od, d'mishum d'rov ha'kenisa b'darom haya. Most people, says the Tiferet Yisrael, would enter the Temple Mount from the southern southern gate. Right? If you're facing the Kotel, so it's the all the way to the right, and you turn the corner, and those big gates are there. People would enter from the south. Nimsa misha nichnas derech sha'arei darom. So you'll, if that's the case, you'll see people who go in through the southern gate, uponelis smolo, and then they turn to the left, makdim umemaher lemekom hamikdash. So they, as they walk, it's the shortest path, it's the shortest distance from the gate to the actual building of the Beit HaMikdash itself. So other people would go, and it was a long way around. This was a beeline right to the temple. It says that the Tiferet Yisrael, v'notein bazeh remez l'ro'av shetzarich l'rachamei shamayim. By doing this, he's giving a hint, he's showing the people who see him that he requires heavenly mercy. V'hu ki yeled shehu b'tzar shehu ratz uba lebeit aviv miyad. And it's like a little child who's in pain, who runs home to his mother or his father looking for comfort. But a very powerful and beautiful image. Right, he runs right there. But if this is the case, why do they walk this way? Who's the beneficiary of the chesed? The avil, or the person in tsar, is the beneficiary. So what we had asked before, who's the benefit? So we saw on the one hand, when it came to Panim Chadashot, that the Sheva Brachot, that the blessings are for the sake of the Gomel Chesed, not the person, not the Chatan and Kala. We saw in the case of the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer building those two gates, that those were an opportunity for the person who's performing the Chesed, not for the person who is sitting Shiva, or the person who had just gotten married. The Mishnah in Midot seems to suggest the opposite, that the purpose of the chesed is for the person who needs the chesed, not for the person who is performing it. Okay. So let's go back. Okay. So that's answer number. That was section 4 or 5, whatever we're up to. Okay. One more halacha, and then we're going to try to bring this all together. Page 4. An important halacha reported by the Shulchan Aruch, of course, from earlier sources. Line 151. Ein ha-menachamim resha'in liftoach ad sheyiftach ha'avel tchila. The people who come to make a shiva call are not permitted to speak to the mourner until the mourner starts to talk to them. Right? It's a halacha that most people know and that most people don't observe. Right? We're so uncomfortable sitting there and not sure. We just babble and say things and ask things that are really extremely inappropriate in terms of the mitzvah. You're not supposed to talk until the avel begins to speak. What's the purpose of that halacha? What would you say? What's the reason?
What you just said.
What I just said, okay, maybe the person might want to speak, right? And you want to make sure that the person is in the right frame of mind to want to engage in conversation, or you want to be able to respond appropriately and not just say something that's not appropriate for the person at that particular time. That's what I would have said as well. However, take a look at line 160, 161. The Levush, in his commentary, the Shulchan Aruch, in this halacha, says as follows. V'tama demistaber, v'mistaber hu kolomar, shehu madchil laharot sa'aro, that when the Avel begins to speak, she's beginning to express their tsar, their anguish. Shemitzar ma'od al meito, that they have a lot of grief over the person that's lost. V'yachar kach madchilin l'nachamo, and then you can begin to comfort. Aval mikodem, but before the Avel speaks, ein shayach l'nachamo, it's not just not appropriate, but it's not appropriate to offer words of comfort. Deshema eino mitzaer al meto. Maybe he's not grieving over the one he lost. That's very strange. That's very strange. In other words, the person's not grieving. You'll come and you'll start to offer comfort and you're going to cause tsar to the person sitting shiva. Lufish is very strange. What does this mean? What does it mean that the person may not be grieving? The person may not be mourning. And you are going to impose this on the person. It's a strange thing. So I'd like to offer a couple of answers to that. One is that may actually be true in a number of different ways. Number one, there are different, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross introduced us to various stages of grief, right? Apply to mourning as well, 5 stages of grief. And the first of those 5 is denial. The denial is a very important defense mechanism in order to help us sometimes overcome very intense issues in our lives or deal with intense moments in our lives that we're not yet equipped physically, emotionally, mentally to be able to confront. And so if a person in the beginning is in a state of denial, and you come and you push him or her out of that state of denial prematurely, in fact, you're not doing that person any favors at all. Right? So it could be, she'enu mitzayir al-meito, not that the person doesn't feel the loss, it's just that they're not ready to express it and to really give it, you know, the full expression, as it were, and you're not allowed to violate that. It's interesting, I was at a funeral this morning. Rachel and I just came back from Philadelphia, an aunt of mine passed away, and I was thinking about the share also that we were going to share tonight. And it's interesting, when do we not follow this halacha? Immediately following the kavura, we follow the burial, what happens? We make shurot, we make 2 lines, and as the aveilim are passing through the lines, it's amokam yenachim etchem, we offer words of comfort. Has the avil said anything? No, not at all. So what right do we have to make shurot and offer comfort, right, against Ad Yiftacha Avot Chila? So those shurot actually may be based on Birkat Aveilim. It's a whole other shir that we could get into. But it may be that what we're hinting to the mourner is that, and Halacha does this for us, and Uncle Mike speaks about this as well, is that we're forced to mourn, and then we're forced to stop mourning. Right, that after Shiva, you have to get up, and you have to go out of the house, and you have to begin to engage life again, almost whether you want to or not. And you have to go from Shiva into Shloshim and for parents after Yud Bet Chodesh, and then you move on. Right? So maybe the hint there is saying to the Avel, we turn our backs to the grave, to the loved one we just finished burying, and now we're saying we're going to help escort you into the next phase of life. But the truth is, It's really not Nichum Aveilim. Right? If all somebody does is walk into your house when you're sitting Shiva and look at you and say, Amakam Yenachem Etchem, is that really comfort? Right? It's a formula. And the real Nichum Aveilim is sitting with the person and engaging with the person and talking to the person. We offer Amakam Yenachem. If you look at some of the sources, some say it's not Nichum at all. It may just be a form of Bracha. Some say it is a form of Nichum, whatever it may be. But once we finish that formula at the cemetery, we then have to wait until the avel is ready. So that's answer number one with regard to I think why we don't say it. Answer number two is that not everybody mourns for a parent who's lost. Part of the evolution of my various careers is very involved in issues of abuse, child abuse and domestic violence and clergy abuse. And one of the things that I began to become sensitive to and actually published an article about was the question of sitting Shiva, Avelus, saying Kaddish for an abusive parent. In which being forced to go through those actions may actually be worse emotionally and psychologically for the child than not doing so. And the truth is, you know, many of us had wonderful parents, and many of us didn't have wonderful parents. And many of us feel great anguish and angst at the loss of a parent. And others of us don't have those same kinds of emotions because of the histories that we had. Once I realized this, the way I would speak as a rabbi before my sermons before Yisker changed. I remember I used to, in the beginning of my career, I've been in other shuls listening to rabbis, and we all remember the parents that we loved and that sacrificed for us and that did that. And it may be true for many in shul, and it may not be true for people in shul. And so, you know, how do you formulate a message for everybody sitting there that's sensitive to the emotional well-being of people that are there? And so when the Levush says, Shema Eino Mitzar Al Meito, it may just be that the person's grief is very complicated. And that the words that we think we should say are not the words that the person needs to hear or the person should hear. And it may actually make that person's experience worse rather than making it any better. And that's why you have to wait, right? You have to wait until the Avel starts to speak, and you have to respond to what the Avel says. And you have to be smart about understanding what those sensitivities are. That's answer number two to this question of why we don't. Maybe it's denial, and we have to wait, or maybe we have to be appropriate for the person and that person's experiences, which we may not understand or know until there's some kind of conversation that the mourner begins. I think there's a third answer, and that third answer was going to answer our Panim Chadashot question as well. Okay, so let's step back and remind ourselves what that was and try to figure this out. We said there were Panim Chadashot when it comes to Sheva Brachot for a bride and groom because, well, if it's for the sake of the bride and groom, it adds to the celebration and the joy of the bride and groom. If it's for the sake of the new people, it's because they haven't yet heard the blessings. How does this apply to a person sitting Shiva? What role or impact would Parim Chadashot have for a mourner, for a person who's sitting Shiva? And do you require Panim Chadashot? If you take one more source that I should have quoted to you before, and we'll look at that now. It's the Rambam. Yep, on the bottom of page 3, line 141. This is Hilchot Avela Perek Yud Gimel Halacha Bet. So it talks about the comfort that we offer the mourner first at the cemetery. And then after we finish at the cemetery, the end of line 140, the first beginning of line 142, V'achar kach olecha aver lebeito, the mourner goes home, v'chol yom v'yom mishivat yimei havelut, and all during the shiva, the 7 days of mourning, ba'in b'nei adam l'nachamo, people come to offer comfort, bein sheba'u panim chadashot, bein shelo ba'u, whether new people come or not. So we saw before in the Gemara, the Panim Chadashot, whether the mourner wears tefillin, doesn't wear the tefillin, puts on, remains with the tefillin, and that words of comfort are offered, whether or not there are Panim Chadashot. So what sense can we make out of this? So it'll depend. It'll depend on whether the Nicham Avelim is for the sake of the mourner or for the sake of the comforter. Just as we saw those two gates in the Beit HaMikdash, just as we saw some of the other things that we were talking about. If Nicham Avelim is for the sake of the comforter, right? So I come day two of the Shiva, and we sit and we talk, and I offer my words of comfort, and I say, Amakom Yenachem, then I come back the next day, or I come back 2 days later. Do I have a mitzvah of Nicham Avelim? So if it's for the sake of the comforter, what would you say? Maybe not. I did my mitzvah already. I already offered my words of condolence. So maybe there's no obligation of Nicham Avelim. That's a possibility, right? If it's for the sake of the mourner, what would you say? Maybe there's no mitzvah because I heard from you already, right? You came, you left. I was glad that you left. I don't know what the... But you've already comforted me. So what more do you have? What more do you have to offer? Right? It hasn't changed. My experience hasn't changed. Right? Maybe similar to Panim Chadasha when it comes to Shever Brachos for Achasim Nekala. Why? Why do you need Shever Brachos at the Panim Chadasha for the meal? Right? Either for the sake of those who haven't heard, but if it's for the sake of the bride and groom, why? Because when guests come, when new people come who haven't celebrated yet, it's nicer, it's happier. So we're gonna make the blessings. But if everybody's heard it already, your presence doesn't make me any happier. As a matter of fact, you've been to 7 of my Shever Brachos already in the past 2.5 days, and I'm tired of seeing you, right? But nothing changes. So it doesn't require additional bracha. It's only if new people come, and so there's a new infusion of excitement, of enthusiasm, of happiness, then you would require a blessing. That's one possible answer. Either I haven't heard the brachos, or my presence increases your joy. But if not, then there's no obligation. But so that's true when it comes to chasen and kala. That's true for shever brachos for after a marriage. But the Rambam paskins that there's a mitzvah of nicham avelim even when there's no panim chadashot. Right, that's what he says. Bein shabo panim chadashot, bein shalo bo. So if the same people come every day of Shiva, they have to be menachim again. What does that serve? What purpose does that serve? And that's one question. And the other question is what do panim chadashot do? So if we require panim chadashot, I would argue as follows. Those of us who have had the experience of sitting Shiva, it's a very difficult experience. After a while, the people, if somebody comes today, somebody comes tomorrow, somebody comes the day after. So we've seen them already. It's okay, the person's here again. Nothing qualitatively changes in my experience. But let's say you have an old friend, right, you haven't seen in 20 years. And the person grew up in your house, and the person you're sitting Shiva for, drove carpool together, and you had whatever it may be, right? And you see that person now for the first time on day 4 of Shiva. What happens to your avelus? What happens to your grief? It becomes more intense. The scab that was beginning to form seems to be, ripped off. And so panim chadashos then would require a new act of nechama, a new expression of comfort. If it's the same people, then an expression of comfort would not be required. That would be the argument against the Rambam's position that nechama velim applies only when you have panim chadasha. What happens, however, according to the Rambam, where you don't have panim chadasha? Why is there still a mitzvah of nechama velim? I perform the mitzvah. You've seen me already. So I would argue. That mourning is a different kind of experience, because it comes in fits and starts, and sometimes it's like a roller coaster. You can come see me today, and everything seems to be okay. I'm composed. Everything seems to be, and you come an hour later. You'll come the next day, and I'm devastated. Right? The mourning is a process that takes. It's not, you don't just snap your fingers and get over it, and you don't just reach a certain level of comfort and then not slide back. It's almost like a roller coaster at times. And so every time you come, I require a different type of nechama. Maybe the last time you saw me, I was not as upset, and today I am more upset. Or maybe when you saw me yesterday, I was thinking about one issue. And now when you come 2 days later, all of a sudden, there's something else in my mind that's inspired by the loss. And so every time a person comes into the house of Shiva, I would argue they are panim chadashot, because the mourner is different, and therefore those who are visiting are different as well. And that's why I think that's why when it comes to tefillin, for example, the opinion that says you take off the tefillin even if it's a couple of days later. Why? Because when that person I haven't seen in 20 years comes to the door, it's not the fifth day of Shiva anymore. It's like the first day. And with all of that experience, all the emotions that are now I'm giving expression, it's like the first day again, and therefore wearing tefillin would be inappropriate. Okay, so it's not by accident then that this concept of panim chadashot, whether it's sheva brachot or it's during shiva, the impact that the person has on the people and the objects of the persons who are in need of their support and their comfort become very important and very significant. It's no accident then that the Yerushalmi then will combine the takana of Moshe Rabbeinu, the 7 days of shiva, and the 7 days of sheva brachot for the chatan and kala of mourning and of celebration as well, because they're similar themes, and it speaks very beautifully, very poignantly, about the interaction between individuals, the obligation that I have to offer support, to be mesameach somebody, to be menachem, to offer words of comfort to somebody, and the need that that person, in a vulnerable moment and period of their lives, episode of their lives, needs the help and the support and the encouragement and the shoulders, sometimes the very broad shoulders, of people who come to celebrate with them or to mourn with them and to offer them and to offer them comfort. This idea with we saw in this 3-day age that the mitzvah of Mishloach Manot is really 354 days a year, right? It's a mitzvah tamidit. This obligation of chesed is an obligation that falls upon us 354 days a year. First of all, because we need it. Because we need it. We need to, we said one of the sources of this is the halachta bedrachav, to walk in God's ways, to imitate God, in order to flesh out the tzelem Elohim, to give expression to the image of God in which we are created. We need to be ba'alei chesed. We need to, in a mature and sophisticated way, be gomlei chasadim, to perform these acts. We need to transform ourselves. Rabbi Soloveitchik pointed out the difference between a merachem and a rachaman. What's the difference? That a merachem is somebody who performs acts of rachamim, and a rachaman is somebody whose character, whose whole essence and whole being is one of rachamim. And by being constantly aware of this and performing these acts of kindness, we transform ourselves, and therefore, baruch no hanotein sachar tov l'gomlei chasadim, we need it. But equally, the people whose lives are in turmoil, are in a state of flux, for good or for bad, need those acts of chesed as well. And we need to, in a very sensitive way, understand the situations in which they find themselves, respond appropriately to the situation, to the moment and of where they are and what they're thinking and what they are and what they're feeling, and in a very, very sensitive way be there, because the mitzvah of Yahafarecha Kamocha, of loving our neighbors, loving our friends as ourselves. Halavai, we should be able to be zoche to perform these things, to learn from the legacy of Rabbi Maurice Lamb, who through his works and through his rabbinate and through all the things that he did, was a man who was not only a merachem, but who was a rachaman. Yehi zichro baruch, may his memory be for a blessing, and may the lessons that he taught us and the continued dedication of his family, of his wife and of his children and his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren, that live lives of Torah, of mitzvot, and of chesed, be a schut for him and continue his legacy, God willing, for many, many years to come. Thank you.